Today, how real households are coping with the property pickle despite the hype. Hi again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Well, today I want to go through some of the latest analysis from our surveys to the end of September and try and paint a more balanced picture than the hype in the media about what's going on with households. As I discussed last week, there's a whole bunch of questions here beyond the hype. But of course, the hype is mega. For example, first home buyers take advantage of spring auctions, screams from the Finch Review, saying that the preliminary clearance rate nationally lifted to 71.9%, despite the disruption of a long weekend in most states, according to Cotality. Or indeed, Domain reported that overall the clearance rates, remember this is of course the comparison of number sold versus reported, not the number listed, was at 72.1% in Sydney, 70.1% in Melbourne, and 69.4% nationally. Well, if you look carefully, that's a little bit different from last week. But again, it's all to do with holidays and things. But guess what? Everybody sheeted the momentum to the support to first buyers, which started now. Of course, the Finn Review went further. $225,000 help for first home buyers to send prices flying. This is a recent article again on the 5th of October saying first home buyers in some states are receiving as much as $225,000 in government assistance when they purchase a $1 million property, which economists warn is compounding the problem of Australia's housing affordability crisis. Property prices have risen 5% since the Reserve Bank started cutting rates in February, and economists are now tipping the market is on the verge of a bull run fueled by an influx of first home buyers and property investors taking advantage of lower interest rates. And just to break down that $225,000, in addition to the government's first home guarantee, eligible first home buyers can receive stamp duty exemptions as well as subsidies for new homes purchased up to a certain price point. For example, somebody who buys a newly built $1 million property in Queensland on a 5% deposit will now need $150,000 less than if they were saving 20%. And if they take advantage of the stamp duty exemptions on offer, they save a further $30,000. And by saving on Lambeth's mortgage insurance, that's $45,000 off. So adding up, this first home buyer made an upfront saving of $225,000, although over the term of their mortgage, they will still have to pay the $150,000 saved on the deposit at the outset. And of course, there is the catch, because people will still be assessed on their ability to service their mortgage. And frankly, if you can afford to get $1 million property with that size of mortgage, your income's going to be very large and well above average. We'll come onto that shortly. So again, there's a lot of spin here, a lot of kerfuffle. And the reality is that things are rather different when you stand back and think more balanced. And by the way, what I'm looking at are households who've already got mortgages or are paying the rent. And this is, of course, the granular analysis from our surveys, which has a very different spin to it than the stuff in the mainstream media. But, of course, they still push on. Property prices have risen 5% since the RBA started cutting rates in February. This is a chart from Cotality, and they're claiming we're on the verge of a bull run. And they also quote this research from Morgan Stanley, which showed that after the first iteration of the First Home Guarantee Scheme in 2020, first home buyers accounted for a third of new home loans. Yeah, so there will be some boost. But let me stress again, as I discussed the other day, here are some home truths. You've still got to be able to repay the mortgage, and you've got to be able to cover the other cash flows with a household that is trying to balance a large budget with lots of commitments, which of course is what my survey's at. And it's worth highlighting here that news.com.au reported Labour's new first home buyer scheme has faced fierce backlash, and they quote examples where house prices are already up. We are seeing some people moving higher the asking price that they're prepared to settle, hoping to capitalise. So it is part of this story that actually these incentives really don't support buyers, they support sellers, because sellers will now feel more empowered to be able to go and ask that higher amount. Of course, this is part of the pressure to continue the momentum. Why? Because the government is fixated on trying to support property. It's the only game in town. But of course, it's a very significant pressure on households subsequent. And of course, I discussed recently the RBA's financial stability review, when they basically said, everything's fine, folks. Look over here. It's looking pretty good. Of course, there are risks overseas. But, you know, as I discussed, there is another side to this. Households are really under pressure. And just to give you a bit of sense of that, this is data from the ABC that show that the average income needed to afford a house in each capital city is, well, stupid, really. $293,000 in Sydney, $189,000 in Melbourne, $140,000 in Perth, but Brisbane, $178,000, and even in Hobart, $148,000. These are very significant numbers. Oh, and by the way, if you want to take another view on this, it's also worth highlighting that the average new construction cost has risen significantly more than wages growth. And that, again, highlights the disconnect between real incomes for real households and what's going on with the cost of construction. And taking that conversation slightly further, as Senator Andrew Bragg reported commenting on an ABC article in a partnership with Housing Choices Australia, the superbac provider won contracts for 2,791 homes in 10 separate projects worth a combined $2 billion, which is the equivalent of $732,000 per home. And the question is, well, is that sustainable? Is the HAF going to achieve what it set out to achieve? Could it actually, in some cases, be $1 million plus on some projects? And of course, the HAF has been set with delays, and the promise to build the 40,000 social and affordable homes in 5 years is looking pretty sick. Those inside the sector and government say that while the program is gathering steam and will make a much needed contribution to the stock of housing, its early stumbles are a reminder that fixing the housing crisis is a slow, even excruciating undertaking. Spot on. And they provided this chart, which just showed the very slow level of growth in public and community housing. Of course, the idea that government has done over time is to outsource the rental sector to the private sector, which has worked really well, hasn't it? Well, no, not if you're in the rental sector. And just building on that, there is obviously the story from government trying to simplify building regulations, although no one's policing it. And the question, of course, is will they achieve their 1.2 million homes target? Well, Treasury advises Labour won't be met. And in a report earlier in the year, they actually suggested that the 1.2 million homes target would not be met and floated changing it, advising the government to build on its agenda by crafting a coherent and well-prioritised housing agenda. Yeah, there has been substantial public commentary about the viability of the target, with housing completions so far well off track, and ministers have described the target as ambitious, but have maintained it can be met. So when you stand back and think about all the things I've discussed so far, you can see that we are in a bit of a pickle. But the pickle really comes home to roost when you start looking at real households and what their budgets are. And that, of course, is what my survey is trying to do. So now I'm going to take you through the latest analysis, reminding you, of course, that we survey households. It's a rolling survey, 52,000 in the household survey at any one time. And we update it each month. We can slice and dice the data and look at it from a number of different cuts, from state view, from property status view, or indeed our master segmentation. And as well as looking at where things are, we can also run some scenarios going forward based on where rates might run and where prices might run. And we'll share some of that today as well. The core market model therefore takes our mortgage stress data, the price trajectory, the history data on property, the buying and selling intentions, the migration data, the economic data more broadly, the CPI, the wages and employment data, put it into the core market model, overlay the scenarios, and then we can calculate at a postcode level and roll it up to a region, a state, and all Australia level, and form a view about where things may run into the future. Now, if you want a really detailed local view of what's going on, I do provide that on my one-to-one service. This one-to-one service is an individual confidential discussion with me. I can't give specific financial advice, but I can look at my data at a particular suburb or even postcode level and look at the underlying trends. I can look at the stress data, the home price trend data, and extract a view of price trend as well based on my modeling. It takes about an hour to have that conversation via Zoom or via phone. And if you are interested, you can book with me. There is a charge involved because, frankly, there's a lot of work to be done behind the scenes to be able to do this work effectively. And if you are interested, you can contact me by my blog. Spaces are limited. We are booking 3 to 5 weeks ahead at the moment because there's quite a lot of significant demand for this. So let's now turn to the question of stress, financial stress. There are many different definitions out there, but I use one which is cash flow based rather than a set 30% of income or maybe even taxable income or even looking at some of the underwriting metrics that other people use. I think money in and money out is the best test of how households are faring. And if households have more outgoings, excluding one-off discretionary items, than income, we define them as stressed. If they have a mortgage, they're in mortgage stress. If renting, they're in rental stress. We can look at investors as well from cash flow pressure perspective. They are stressed investors potentially. And we can aggregate the data to estimate total financial stress down at the postcode level. So that tells you how many households are doing it tough or are in a pickle. And we can express it in percentage terms of households or indeed counts. I think the count tends to offer a better view simply because it is the law of big numbers. Now, the RBA some time ago published this spectrum of household financial stress, which I find quite a useful tool. They argued then that initially budget pressures would be where things started to go wrong. That's mild intensity of financial stress. But over time, for some people, it will go into missing payments or even insolvency. But that journey can take 3 to 5 years. And of course, as I discussed the other day, at the moment, insolvency rates are relatively low. And there are some missing payments. But even there, banks are being quite flexible. And because of that, and because of the fact that banks are extending and pretending for many people, people in budget pressures can stay in that stasis area for quite a long period of time, not slipping into missing payments or insolvency and therefore severe financial stress, but still trying to balance the budget and trying to prioritize effectively. And that is where a lot of people are. And to give you a sense of what that means, this is the data to September 2025 based on our surveys. We start with rental stress. And you can see there that rental stress is still very high. 74.6% of households who are renting are in rental stress. In other words, they have cash flow pressures trying to meet their rental payments. They, of course, will prioritize that because they need to keep the roof over their head. But in so doing, they prioritize that against other things. And you can see there that 74.6% of households is a very large proportion of those in the rental sector. And it's been high for quite some period of time. It climbed from 2018, 19 and 20, shot up in 21 and 22 as rents shot up too, and has stayed in that same high state. Looking at the mortgage story, well, mortgage stress is at 49.9%, so about half of households are still struggling with their mortgage repayments. They're still making those mortgage repayments, but are in so doing cutting back on other things. Compare that with 32.9% in February 2020 before COVID hit. And you can see that we've really not come out of those pressures that were built up in the following years. And by the way, the debt to income ratio, according to the RBA, this is the amount of debt that people on average have relative to income, is at 181.4. It's still very high and is really not coming down. And as I always remind you, that this is a bit of a myopic view because it includes all households, whether they are borrowing or not. The truth is that many households with a mortgage have a debt-to-income ratio of 6, 7, 8, or even 9 times or even more. So with that introduction, here is the latest for September 2025, showing at a state level the mortgage stress, the rental stress, the investor stress, and the financial stress. And you can see in yellow where it's gone up from last month, and blue where it's come down from last month. So you can see there that mortgage stress dropped in the ACT, New South Wales, in Queensland, Tasmania, Victoria, and Western Australia. And the average dropped to 49.9. That was because of three things. Firstly, the low income increases for some households have followed through now. Secondly, there have been some rate cuts for some people. And thirdly, some people are still working more jobs to be able to drive more income into their household budgets. However, mortgage stress rose in the Northern Territories and in South Australia. Rental stress grew in New South Wales, South Australia, and Western Australia, and we are seeing very strong rental growth, unfortunately, continuing despite the top-level ABS data suggesting that rents weren't growing that fast now. Investors are still having a hard time, particularly in the ACT, Northern Territories, South Australia, Victoria, and Western Australia. And actually, the proportion of investors who are in difficulty rose to 17.5%. And that is partly because the costs of servicing investor mortgages are still rising relative to the rental incomes that are being generated. And overall financial stress rose in the Northern Territories, South Australia, and Western Australia this month, but fell in the ACT, was pretty much the same in New South Wales, fell in Queensland, Tasmania, Victoria, and fell overall. But just to be clear, these are still big numbers. There's more than 10 million households in the country now. And looking at the mortgage stress at 49.9%, that's still 1.8 million households in mortgage stress. The 74.6% of those in the rental sector means rental stress is 2.3 million households. The stressed investors at 17.5% mean there's still more than 500,000 investors across the country struggling, particularly, by the way, in Melbourne. And overall financial stress at 47.1% means that 4.7 million households out of the 10 million are struggling with their cash flow. Another way of looking at the data is by our cohorts. And you can see there that young growing families, including first-time buyers at 88.6%, have the highest level of mortgage stress, more than 286,000 households in that category. In the rental sector, it's broadly spread, but I do find it interesting that first-generation Australians, the multicultural establishment, those who've come in recently, do have the highest level of rental stress at 82.7%, and that's more than 192,000 households in this sector who are in difficulty. But it is broadly based, and you can see there that young growing families, as well as young affluents and mature stable families, are all in difficulty. Looking at the investor cohorts, exclusive professionals are right up there, as are young affluents. They tend to have more investment properties, but they are still struggling with some cash flow pressures on their investment properties. And overall, young growing families at 67.8% have the highest level of financial stress overall. That's more than 500,000 young growing families, including first-time buyers, who are under the pump. If we then turn to look at the data at a postcode level, mortgage stress was highest this month in Wanneroo, postcode 6065 in Western Australia. We are seeing significant pressures over in the West at 85.7% of those with mortgages. Liverpool in New South Wales, 2170 was next. Then Campbelltown in New South Wales, 2560. And Toowoomba in Queensland at 4350. Then we had Narrawarren in Victoria, postcode 3805, and Camden in New South Wales, 2570. Berwick and Harkaway in Victoria, 3806. Ballarat in 3350. Pakenham, 3810. Roxburgh Park and Craigieburn, 3064. Riverstone, New South Wales 2765, Tarnet in Victoria 3029, and Cranbourne in Victoria 3977. And yes, many of these postcodes are high growth corridors with lots of new first-time buyers and off-the-plan properties being purchased. And many of those are being purchased directly by new migrants coming into Australia, as well as first-time buyers from the local communities. Now, if we look at risk of default, this is my modelling ahead, and risk of default is still relatively low, but it is concentrated in a relatively small number of postcodes. In fact, Cranbourne in Victoria 3977 has the highest risk of default, with more than 1,000 households potentially going underwater over the next 12 months. Then Armidale in Western Australia 6112, then Tarnet and Hobbs Crossing 3029 in Victoria. Mandra in Western Australia is still in difficulty from the earlier boom and bust. Roxburgh Park and Craigieburn in Victoria 3064. Then Success in Western Australia 6164. Bundaberg 4670 in Queensland. Gosford in New South Wales 2250. Derrimut and Point Cook in Victoria 3030. Sampson in Western Australia 6163. Wanneroo 6065. Toowoomba in Queensland 4350. Coomera in Queensland 4209. And Mount Pleasant up in Mackay, postcode 4740. And you can see there that we're still looking at somewhere between 4 and 5% of households risking default in these particular areas unless things change in the next few months. If we look at rental stress, Melbourne postcode 3000 is still up there. It's been number one for quite a period of time, with more than 15,600 households in rental stress in and around the centre of Melbourne. Liverpool, postcode 2170 is next, then Toowoomba in Queensland, 4350, Southport in Queensland, 4215, Tarnet in Victoria, 3029, Westmead, 2145, Mount Druitt, 2770, Campbelltown, 2560, Zetland, 2017, Ipswich, 4305, Parramatta, 2150, Coomera, 4209, and Gosford, 2250, and Bundaberg, 4670 are all on the list. And I would highlight that in some of these areas, there are a lot of renters who are really under the pump. If I look at stressed investors, this is the other side of the equation. So these are investors who are finding it difficult to see any returns from their investment property, not least from a cash flow perspective. Narrabeen, postcode 2065, is at the top of the list, followed by Cranbourne 3977 and Mandra in Western Australia 6210, then Toowoomba 4350, Blacktown 2148, Coomera 4209, Benoit 4217 in Queensland, Beaumont Hills 2155, Bundaberg 4670, Sampson in Western Australia 6130, Epping in New South Wales 2121, Westmead 2145, Hornsby 2077, and Yatala in Queensland 4207. And finally, we look at financial stress overall. This is the aggregated information, and Toowoomba at the top of the list there, 4350, has the unfortunate record at the moment of being the most financially stressed postcode at 56.4% of households in this postcode. Then Liverpool 2170, Campbelltown 2560, Tarnet in Victoria 3029, Cranbourne in Victoria 3977, Centre of Melbourne 3000, Ipswich postcode 4305, Mount Druitt in New South Wales 2770, Ballarat in Victoria 3350, Roxburgh Park 3064, Wanneroo, postcode 6065, Derrimut, 3030 in Victoria, Southport in Queensland, 4215, Blacktown, 2148 in New South Wales, and Camden, postcode 2570 New South Wales. That's a combination of high growth corridors, some regional areas, and some areas closer into the centre of town. Now, we also look at our scenarios. Scenarios are a way of exploring different sensitivities, different futures. They're not predictions. None of these scenarios may turn out right, things change, but it does help to look at the sensitivities ahead. And we have three scenarios. the so-called Goldilocks zone, the best case. Now, best case from a house price growth perspective, not necessarily from a household finance perspective. And here in this one, we are expecting further rate cuts through this year to 3.35%. We do see inflation easing in this scenario, in line with RBA expectations. Wages rise faster than inflation. We don't get a recession. Migration remains above average, and we get first-time buyer booming into the market. The second is the softer landing, where we have rates still staying at 3.6% until the end of the year. Inflation does ease, but still rises a bit later and is still above target until 2026. We don't get a recession in Australia, but migration does begin to ease away. And the third, the worst, the nightmare scenario, where we see rates sticking at 3.6%, but inflation steps up, unemployment rises, wages growth stalls, and that's partly because of the trade-led recession in Australia that is likely, perhaps, following the second-order Trump trade tariffs and the impact on China. We do see rate cuts later. Migration drops below average. They're just sensitivities, and it gives you a bit of a flavour of how things might move. And on aggregate level, if in fact we get the best case scenario, we do expect home prices to rise quite significantly, up to 14.8% over the next 3 years. The base case scenario would keep house prices roughly level, even if we get the first time boom, because it will run out of smoke. There won't be that many people who can afford to take the first time buyer grants. And the worst case scenario would be a fall. Units tend to follow on, but perhaps they drop a little less simply because of the supply demand disequilibrium. So that gives you the summary from my latest analysis, and it gives you a bit of a flavour of what we're seeing. And it is important to understand that this is a bottom-up piece of analysis based on very contemporary data, not the lagged information or the top-down information that the RBA used in their recent financial stability report, as I discussed. So I do believe that my information is more relevant to many households. But, you know, there are some doing quite well. Half of households are doing fine. And so in the comments, be interested to know whether you are one of those households who are actually doing really well, or whether you are actually hanging on by your fingertips and having to prioritize and make hard decisions all the time about what to spend, where to spend. Certainly in my surveys, there are many households who are cutting back on different discretionary spending and even now prioritizing things like not getting dental treatment or pulling kids out of school to reduce school fees, those sorts of things. And I do think the issues with regard to medical treatment are quite significant for many households too. But also note that in some cases, people are going for the cheaper food options, not necessarily the healthy food options, which is another side effect of what we're seeing here. So this is a bit of a problem. And the granularity that we've got here, which isn't really represented now in what the ABS is reporting, of course, they're not reporting a lot of their surveys because they don't believe the data anymore, means that we're actually in a bit of a no man's land when it comes to what's going on. But at least there is some information here. Now, of course, I do provide information down at the postcode level, and this is a little bit of a snapshot. This is for postcode 2500 Wollongong, and of course I can look there, as I always do, at the levels of stress, the number of households and the mix between those borrowing outright, those owning outright, and those renting. I also look at the property mix between houses and units. Those, of course, are quite important to understand when it comes to price dynamics. We can also look at the people ratio, whether they're individuals or whether they're larger families, and the vacancy rates. We've also got the gross investment yield, which is the combination of the price of a property, theoretical at least, relative to the theoretical income that could be generated if the property was fully let, and also the net investment yield, which is the reality between the income generated from rentals in the particular postcode relative to the cost of the rental, including the costs of finance and also managing the property and keeping it in good repair. And finally, in our analysis, we can look at the taxable income, both from the ATO based on the tax year 23-24, and also from the census at a household level based on the 2021 base census. That gives us a disposal monthly income calculation, which is here just over $6,000. And you can see there that there's, in this particular example, 40.5% of income on average, that is after tax income, is going to pay the mortgage at more than $2,467 a month. And 32.7% of that income is going on the typical rent at $1,993 a month. That's 32.7% of income. Now, we can, of course, go through this information at more than 2,000 postcodes. And in fact, next Tuesday week, that's on the 14th of October, we will be actually going through the postcode level analysis. So if you have a particular postcode that you'd like me to feature on the 14th of October live show, put it in the comments below and I will endeavor to include it. And if I have time, I will include some price trend information too, because I find that that is actually quite helpful. But just to talk about this thumbnail for a second, you can see I've got a pile of properties in the middle of the Brisbane River and people are finding it hard to get at them. And I've got the vultures circling from above as well, which is a bit of a metaphor for what we're seeing at the moment in my view. Now, if you would be interested in getting information at a postcode level, put it in the comments below and I'll try and cover it. I have a few requests from earlier on as well, which I'm also going to pick up. Because I think the real truth is that you get a better sense of what's going on down on the ground when you actually look at the significant issues facing real households on a postcode by postcode or suburb by suburb basis. And by the way, that also means that we can also look at the house and unit scenarios from a price perspective, which gives you some sense of where things may be going based on those scenarios. Now, just before I close, I want to highlight, as I often do, that it is really important to get help if indeed you are in financial pressure. This is the sort of pressure that tends to build over time. It tends to sour relationships and indeed can blow up families sometimes. So it's really important to really get to grips with it. How do you do that? Well, firstly, make sure that you have a cash flow so that you understand where your money is coming and where it's going to. And prioritize it. Now, in some cases, that is easy for people because they're used to doing it, but a lot of other households don't really do that. I'm surprised how many people don't really know where they are. They tend to reach for more loans, of course, and sometimes more loans isn't the answer. We're seeing a rise in buy now, pay later and other personal credit at the moment, as I discussed recently. That's a problem because, of course, more debt means more interest, which means effectively putting yourself under more pressure. If you have a mortgage or other debt, you can get help from the National Debt Helpline, 1-800-007-007. This is the government-backed helpline, and they are very busy, but they are very helpful when it comes to dealing with some of these cash flow issues. I always say, be very careful not just to Google help on cash flow or that sort of stuff, because you can end up paying a lot to cowboys to provide advice, which is not very useful, but actually this is a really useful source. So 1-800-007-007 is the number there. And I do recommend if you are in financial difficulty, do reach for them. The financial counselling that they give is very, very valuable and can certainly help to get out of a hole. Now, of course, you can also talk to your lender if you've got a mortgage, and quite often the bank will try to help. They have an obligation under the hardship scheme. But unfortunately, quite often what they will recommend is extending the life of the loan or going interest only for a period of time or restructuring or refinancing. And certainly from my analysis, that may give short-term relief. But in the longer term, it just extends the life of the loan, which means you pay more interest. And of course, it doesn't necessarily change behavior. And I do believe that financial pressure often comes from behavior rather than actually of things. So changing your behavior is very, very important. Getting up to grips with where money's coming from and where it's going to is all part of the discipline that I think people need. And to help with that, there is actually this statement of financial position. It's on the AFCA website. It's available for download. And it gives you the ability to be able to put in things like household income, living expenses, property expenses, other assets, the debts, and also proposals that you may have in terms of dealing with it. This is a useful form to complete for your own use, but also if you're going to have a conversation with the bank or indeed a financial counsellor. So the online statement of financial position there on the AFCA site is available. Just Google it. And just before I go, I will remind you that if you're interested in getting more information about my surveys, we do provide that via our Patreon program. You can actually support me at various levels on Patreon. I appreciate those who do. Thank you very much for doing that. But the level I'm going to talk about specifically is the $50 a month level, where you can actually get the data for the more than 2,000 postcodes in the format that I showed a little while ago, which means that you can actually look at a particular part of Australia and indeed make comparisons between different locations. Now, that's quite helpful if you're thinking of things like, well, where is the returns on investment properties better? You know, you can look at the gross investment yield and net investment yield, or where are prices likely to be rising or not? That is also there available. What is the property mix that's there? And a bunch of other things too. This is an example of the extract that you get, and you get that for each of the postcodes that we cover. Not every single postcode is covered in the model, because there are a small number of very low count household postcodes that we don't actually touch. But nevertheless, most of them, most of the big ones, are covered on a regular basis. We update it each month, and the information is sent out in the week after the live show in which we cover the high-level analysis that we do. Finally, I'll just remind you again, the live show on the 14th of October will go into specifics when it comes to postcodes. And if I have time, I'll also show you some of the property maps and some of the other analysis that we do in our modelling. It's quite detailed, but also quite insightful. So just to bring this show to a close, I want to highlight again, there are significant numbers of households still in significant financial pressure. All of the so-called good news that we're seeing from the mainstream media and from the first-time buyer story is only a small part of the overall story of what's going on. Many households are in a pickle and are continuing so because incomes are not rising relative to expenditure. Inflation is still booming, and the costs of property, whether it's investment property or whether it's actually for own occupation or indeed for rental, is actually a significant impost on many households. And unfortunately, the government approaches that we're seeing is probably throwing more petrol on the fire rather than actually really offering a way out, which means that it's down to individual households grasping the nettle and really making changes to their approach to their finances to hopefully improve things into the future. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.